Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 301 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Mitsubishi Outlander plug-in hybrid, Subaru Crosstrek, Genesis G90, Kia Telluride, some fun track day stuff with Honda, including new electric racing carts and the Beast, and VW finally reveals the three-row U.S. market version of the ID Buzz. Ford ups the price of subscriptions for Blue Cruise. Lordstown Endurance doesn't have much. And Tesla claims the Model 3 is now eligible for a $7,500 tax credit. All that and listener questions coming up next. This is episode 301 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual-Samad, still of Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakeland, still of the Road Reflective Podcast.
And I am Roberto Baldwin, still all over the place, to be completely honest. Today, let's say TechCrunch, since I wrote about the ID Buzz for TechCrunch this week.
Ooh.
Alrighty.
Is ID Buzz on our list?
It is.
Okay.
Oh, you can't have it on
the list. Of course.
You can't not
have it on the list. It has to be on the list.
All right, Nicole, what have you been driving?
I have several things to discuss. So I've been driving several, I know. So let's start with the fancier pants version of the two things I was in. So the Genesis G90 2.5 Turbo E Supercharger all-wheel drive.
I'm looking at the list here, and you said that's the fancier one?
That's the fancier.
I don't know about that.
Wait, what did I put on the list?
G90. No, I mean, no, I think.
Oh, geez, I thought, I'm like, what did I put? You're sarcastic. I'm like, did I accidentally put a Mercedes on there?
Yeah, the Mercedes S-Class.
Yeah, so yeah, man, that's such a down market. I had another G-Wagon. That's the less fancy. So I had the G90, which I like Genesis. I just think it's good because they, just like Hyundai, they give you more content for the buck than other comparable luxury car makers. And I really think Genesis just looks fantastic. Like, you never get one of those and you just get through your week without somebody commenting on something, the way the wheels look, or what is that, or the grill. Like, I always get random comments from people when I'm out to eat or at the grocery store or shipping something at UPS. It really does look, they do look like something special. I really think that. So I love the design of these. This one is, it is not an inexpensive vehicle. So this one starts at $98,700. Mine was $100,370. So it just made it into being a $100,000 car.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot of the monies. It's a lot of monies.
I mean, 10 years ago, it would have been hard to imagine anything from Hyundai costing over $100,000.
Right? That's the thing.
$60,000. You'd be like,
This is a six-figure Hyundai, basically. I feel like that's insulting it a little because you're like, you're as if they just like took a Sonata and made it $100,000. It's not a Sonata.
No. This is a very different car from the Sonata.
This is a very different car. And it has, it's got a 3.5-liter supercharged V6 with 409 horsepower and 405 pound-feet of torque, 8-speed automatic. You push the pedal, it moves. I mean, this really moves. It's fun to drive this. I feel like it does that great balance between being a really aggressive, sporty, performancey kind of drive, but also at the same time, it's a luxury car. So it's quiet. Like, you don't hear the engine and you don't feel the road underneath you. And it, when it shifts, it just does its thing quietly in the background and doesn't disturb anybody. Everybody just lounges.
Like a gentle wind.
Right. It's like a gentle wind, breezing through the vehicle. Although I'll tell you, they have the same, I think, don't they have the same, the little thing where you can make it sound like a roaring fire, or you can make it sound like
sounds of nature.
Sounds of nature. Yeah.
The coffee shop one's still the weirdest. I don't understand that.
I don't know. The crunching snow, I feel like I'm being stalked. So it feels every bit the luxury sedan. in terms of the ride quality, and the it feels like a performance sedan in terms of the acceleration. It accelerates very aggressively. I mean, there's no problem getting out of the highway. It's super fun. If you want to pass people who aren't quite going fast enough for you while still obeying all posted speed limits, you can totally do that. For me, it's like exactly what you want a luxury sedan to be. You want it to have enough performance to get out of its own way, but all the comfort. You don't want it to drive like it's like a Subaru WRX or something. It should be nice and smooth and comfy and relaxing. It also has like the seating, it's crazy. They have these like reclining, the rear seats like actually recline a little bit and have these really super poofy headrest. Have you guys been in the G90? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I sat in it and I did the full recline.
Yeah.
Push the front seat forward.
Right. So you push a button and the passenger front seat like moves all the way forward. And then the backrest tips forward. So it kind of gets completely out of your way. And there's a little footrest that comes up so you can totally lounge. It is the loungiest of sedans. Like when you look at it and you think $100,000, oh my gosh, what can make a car $100,000? Those back seats. The back seats make that worth $100,000. They were so nice. Like, and even up front, you've got power seats and they're heated and ventilated and they've got massage and it just wants you to be comfortable. It wants you to have the most comfortable drive of your life. And it really does it. It is so comfy. And it has features like there's a Bang & Olufsen audio system. There's wireless device charging. You got a 12.3-inch instrument cluster and infotainment screen, both in sort of like one long panel, which looks nice and clean on the dashboard. I really like this. I mean, it's not cheap. And if you can get by the fact that your $100,000 car is a Genesis, which is part of the Hyundai brand, if you're not a brand snob, because if you buy $100,000 in some other luxury brand, you're not going to get as much stuff. You're going to have to spend more money to get the super fancy reclining rear seats. But the only thing I like the power closing rear doors. Like you push a button and the door opens, it pops open a little bit, maybe like 6-7 inches. And then you push it the rest of the way. And then you want it to shut, you push a different button, boop, and it closes for you. But I don't like them from the outside. Like I want to be able to slam a door. You can't slam the doors.
No. I want to be able to
slam
the door.
I think there is something in the settings where you can go in and turn that off.
Is there? And I know you can just like touch the door handle and it's like, oh, you would like me to close myself. I want to slam it. I want to know it's shut. Yeah, I want the satisfaction of the thunk when I walk away. And instead it's like,
a thunk.
It's too delicate. I'm too angry of a door closer. I can't handle the doors that will close themselves. So I like the Genesis G90. I feel like for people who want a luxury car that think that they have to buy like a Mercedes or something, you don't. You can get a lot of luxury in other brands. And it's sort of like when I'm always telling people to look at Hyundai and Kia because they have these impressions of Hyundai and Kia that are completely outdated. It's like, no, give it a chance. It's not what it was 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 years ago. When you see that this is a Hyundai, it's like, no, wait. Give it a chance. Just because it's from the Hyundai brand doesn't mean that it's not a worthy luxury vehicle.
Yeah. The challenge I think Genesis has is that people that are spending that kind of money are probably much more inclined to shop for the label versus shopping for the attributes.
Yeah.
And I mean, this has all the attributes you want and more in a $100,000 car. It just doesn't have the label.
And that's a problem. A lot of people do shop for the label. I mean, you figure if you're spending that kind of, because really to spend that kind of money on a car, that's a lot of money. No matter how deep your pockets are, $100,000 on a car is a lot of money. And if you're doing that, like you can get very many, very nice cars for significantly less than that. So if you're going up into that price range, you probably are looking for a little bit the prestige of driving that car. And I don't know. Do you think Genesis will be able to capture that prestige?
I think in time, like Lexus took a little while for it to get where it is. I think it's harder for Hyundai because Toyota just came. Toyota's together. Just when you think Toyota, you're like, oh, it's just a car that's going to last 7 billion miles. And now we're going to make a luxury version. Whereas Hyundai Hyundai, the whole Hyundai Motor Group is still fighting that.
It's such a shame.
They're still battling the Hyundai XL is what I'm trying. Yeah.
That's so long ago.
This is not your father's XL.
It's not your father's XL. I want to be like, no, come on. People stop. Things change.
This is not your stingy father's XL.
This is not your stingy father's XL.
Yes. So I really am impressed with every Genesis that I get into in terms of delivering a luxury experience from the ride to the materials, to the performance. They always do exactly what they say they're going to do. Like they deliver exactly that, but they just deliver so much more than other luxury brands at the same price point. So please, everybody who's looking for a luxury car, if you're one of those people with super deep pockets, look at Genesis. You're making a mistake if you don't look. You should look at Genesis. Give them a chance.
Give it a chance. Yeah. All we are saying is give Genesis a chance.
Just give Genesis a chance. Yes. So that was that's my fancy car. Saying. Oh, I was waiting for it. Go ahead, Robbie.
Just give Genesis a chance.
Nice. There we go. Lovely. Lovely. The other car I have was not quite so fancy. It was still lovely. It's still the same wheelhouse, I guess, brand.
Same parent company.
Same parent company.
Yeah, same parent company.
Which also should be given a chance. I had the Kia Telluride, which has been around for a couple years now, and everybody loves it. I think everybody loves the Telluride. Is there anybody who doesn't love the Telluride?
I don't think so.
No. Everybody.
I think the Hyundai Palisade product planners.
Oh, yes. The Hyundai Palisade product planners hate the Telluride. yeah, the Telluride three-row SUV, seating for everyone, room for their stuff. This year it gets a bit of a refresh. It looks a little different. It gets a few new features. Like they get sort of, I don't know if it's technically a mid-cycle refresh or just we decided to do some stuff for 2023. So it looks a little bit better. It has some extra stuff. And they introduced the new, it's new to this. They've had it for the X Pro and X Line, which they've been introducing on various Kia models. And those are sort of the more rugged off-road, like they get some off-road stuff. Like for this one, the X Line has a higher ground clearance and raised roof rails. The X Pro gets a higher tow rating, not a heck of a lot higher. The standard tow rating is 5,000. This gets 5,500. So it gives you a little bit more, but like seriously, no Rubicon Trail in this, people. That's not what they mean when they say this is off-road ready.
But it can do more than a dirt driveway.
It can do more than a dirt driveway. It is surprisingly capable. You can do a lot. So it's like if you are someone who ventures off the beaten path to get places a little bit, excuse me, then the X Pro trim is the one to go for. And I had the SX Prestige X Pro, which is the fanciest trim in the X Pro. It's the hardest thing to say the name of this car. What car do you drive? It's 18 words. By the time you finish saying what you're driving, the person is
Kia walking. Telluride.
Yeah.
Telluride. I drive a Telluride. So this one, consider you could have two of these for the price of one Genesis. The one I had was $55,120. So not quite two. So significantly more affordable and it's bigger, but it's lovely inside, but it's not a luxury car. So this one has a 3.8 liter V6, 291 horsepower, 262 pound feet of torques, and it's an 8-speed automatic. So it's fine. I don't think it's an especially aggressive engine, but it's robust enough to make it fine to drive this. I had to drive it through heavy traffic coming out of Boston and it was fine weaving in and out of Boston traffic like one does. Gets up to highway speed. It's relatively quiet, which I think is also important. I mean, it's important in a luxury car. It's important in an SUV, especially one where you have the whole family, because at some point your kids are passed out in the back of that and you don't want every sound outside of the car to like catch their attention. Like there's nothing like driving by a great big tractor trailer and having it make enough noise that the toddler who just fell asleep in the back wakes up and is whiny. Like this
that is happen. That you do not want.
That is the worst when that happens. Like that's a nightmare. Like no, go back to sleep. No. So it's nice and quiet. So it's very very road trip friendly. You can get it with seating for up to 8. There's second row captain's chairs if you want that take it down to 7. I'm a big captain's chairs fan. I feel like unless you really need 8, why are you doing that? Like get captain's chairs, because not only are they comfier for adults, they feel like the seats up front a little bit, you know, they're much comfier. They also keep your kids from fighting so much over the imaginary dividing line that like you've put your toe over the center of the, and now you're on my side and now we're squabbling over whose side. So there is no side. Just an empty dead space in the middle. You don't have to worry about the kids fighting. It's my favorite part about captain's chairs when the kids were little. I'm like, yeah, try fighting over that. There's no center.
Did you have Velcro wrist straps on the booster seats too?
I did not. Velcro, no. So I think, I mean, I like the Telluride. I think the interior is still really nice. It's it has a lot of features. I mean, like I said, the one I had is 55 grand. You have a 12.3 inch touchscreen. There's Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, navigation, charging ports for everyone. There's a 12.3 inch digital instrument cluster on the top trims, which is what I had. 10 speaker Harman Kardon audio. So you get a lot of features, you know, and leather and wood trims and heated and ventilated seats. Like, you get all the bells and whistles. So it, despite not being super cheap, it's actually really, again, it's a good value, but that's what the Hyundai Motor Group tends to do. They give you a really good value in what you get. So I'm a fan of the Kia Telluride for your family.
It's fantastic.
Fantastic. Yes.
All right, Roberto, what did you have?
I drove the Subaru Crosstrek.
Ooh.
It is it's a Subaru, 2024 Subaru Crosstrek. And you know what? You get in the Subaru, but the Subaru, the Crosstrek, the Impreza, you're not paying a lot of money. But I think the starting price for the Crosstrek overall is $26,145. For the premium version I'm driving right now, the base version is $24,995, and the premium version is $26,145. So that's a little more.
For a car with standard all-wheel drive, that is actually very reasonable.
That's a good price.
Standard all-wheel drive. That's the thing. It's like you're going to get the Subaru. You're going to go. You're like, you know what? I drive in the snow. I go off-road. I like to bike and or kayak. And or I think of any all-wheel drive vehicle, I think the Subaru people are the ones who actually do the thing the all-wheel drive is supposed to do.
Did you do the launch program? They had a thing about where they checked with their owners, like, what percentage kayaks? What percentage does this? What percentage does that? And they're like, they were even kind of like, yeah, they really do kayak when they looked at their results.
They do the thing, because at the end of the day, it's very much a smart buy. It's $130,000, which, you know, all wheel drive, anything else is probably going to go. But it's, you know, it's comfortable. The interior it's all very utilitarian. This is where the things are. Push the buttons, make the things. You know, they have that new. The new display in the vehicle, the 11.6 multimedia plus system, whatever. Anyway, it's a portrait display, but next to it, like, to go hot, the high climate controls is just little arrows you push with your fingers. Want to adjust the radio, you just turn a little knob.
What a concept.
Fancy.
Yeah, there's a volume knob, there's buttons for the thing. There's buttons for the things you want buttons for. And then all the other junk is in, you know, the display. You no one's like, oh my god, it's the greatest thing ever, unless you're driving a WRX and STI. You're just like, it's not. Yeah, you're not excited about the speed. Yeah, this thing has 152 horsepower, 145 pound feet of torque. This is from the 4-cylinder 2-liter boxer engine. It's not quick. Really, the biggest downside to the Subaru is the CVT. It's like, just Subaru bought, like, or they have a contract for just CVTs for 70, the next
70 billion CVTs.
70 billion CVTs. That is really the only thing I don't like about this car is the CVT. Now it has a little paddle shifter, so you can do that. So you can pretend, you know, you have control.
I like that you're hand motioning paddle shifters.
I'm hand motioning, you know, because podcasts are a visual medium.
Right, exactly.
I like Subarus because they're very, this is what it does. They're very matter of fact, and they very much, it just does this thing. What do you want to do? You want to go off? Yeah, we can go off-road. You want to go in the mountains? Yeah, you can go in the mountains. All the things you think you need a big SUV for, yeah, you can just do in this thing.
Crosstrek.
And the Crosstrek is like, it's a crossover, or it's a wagon. All the Subarus are wagons. I don't care what you say. I don't care what Subaru says.
Wagons, all of them.
I don't care what they call the Outback. I don't care what they call the Ascent. They're all just wagons. Just be proud of your Subaru wagon. They're all wagons except for the STI and the WRX, which is just heartbreaking. I drove the Impreza a few weeks back, and I like that. I like this. It's, you know, again, not exciting. Not, you know, no one's getting excited about a Crosstrek. But at the same time, if you have one, You can load a bunch of crap in the back. You can load your friends and family. There's headroom. There's legroom. The premium model comes with the raised roof rails for, which is, if you're buying a Subaru, you might as well do that.
Because you got to have some place to put your skis,
your kayak,
your snowboards, your kayak, your snowboard, all the things, your bikes, whatever other random things. It's low to the ground, so it's easy for the dogs to get in and out of, because that's another thing. It's literally their brand is Subaru and dogs.
Dogs. I mean, that's not a bad way to go. I've never had a lot worse.
Yeah, I've never had an automaker say, "Hey, we would like you to take your dogs around in this car." Subaru did that when I was a car driver, because they're like, "Oh, I told the fleet manager, I'm like, hey, I'm going somewhere. I'm taking my dog, and I can't take this." I think it was a Ford. And then like 30 minutes later, he's like, "Subaru would love you to take the new Crosstrek to the mountains with your dog. They're totally fine with it."
I'm like, "Please, all right. Please do."
It is their, yeah, no, it's, it is their jam. The adaptive cruise controls actually feels like they've improved it. It's doing better. You still have to, if you're sitting for too long, you still have to tap the accelerator in order for it to keep going. But it's it's nicer than that Navigator I had the other day. So yeah, it follows well. Cut-ins, people pull it out, pulling away. It's not going to, well, it's not going to go too fast anyway, because it only has 152 horsepower. But when it does, it is if you have a kid who's going to school in the mountains, just throw him a Subaru. Just here you go.
Just throw him a Subaru.
Running into things.
Have at it.
So if they're going to the University of Vermont or...
Oh, yeah. If you're in Vermont, I don't even think you're allowed in Vermont without a Subaru.
You actually must buy a Subaru as soon as you establish residency in Vermont.
Yeah.
Isn't there also a rule that, like, when you get to the state line, if you're not driving a Subaru, you have to park your car and rent one?
Yes.
Yes.
You're not allowed. You're going to get pulled over. Stateies do not mess around.
don't. Yeah, don't even bother. Yeah, no, I really like the Subaru Crosstrek. I love the WRX. That's a whole other vehicle and a whole other beast. But the seats down, you get 54.7 cubic feet of space, which is a nice amount of space. You can shove a bunch of junk back there. The other downside is it doesn't get great fuel economy. This one is 27 city, 34 highway, 29 combined. It's not horrible. I just, the four cylinder, it's 2023. Well, I guess this vehicle is 2024. I just want them to have something that's a little bit more, they have the Crosstrek hybrid, but I mean, there's a reason why I see more Solterras than I see BZ4Xs.
Did you see the thing they did for the Crosstrek where they had the like dog safe everything protectors you could put like on every surface of your car? It was in the trunk. Yeah, they had this thing and it was like, imagine really thick padding, right? Uh-huh. That's like a durable surface. And it went over the floor of the cargo area and like up the backs of the rear seats. Then you had another one that went down the front of the rear seats, and it covered everything, even had these little sort of like little plastic protectors that kind of slid partway sort of into like the seam where the window goes down. It was plastic and had the dog prints on it. But so if your dog is prone to like putting his paws up there and scratching.
Yeah, scratch up the...
You're going to destroy that. It was the most dog-proof, dog-friendly car thing I've ever seen in my life.
Is that a dealer accessory that you can get?
It was an accessory. It was an official Subaru accessory. So it was something it wasn't like they got it from some aftermarket thing. It was literally a Subaru accessory. And it was super cool looking. I have video of it up on, and everyone's like, "Oh my gosh, is that for real?" I'm like, "What, do you think I just made this up and put this in a Subaru?" Yes.
Yeah, so if you have a dog... I mean, by law, you have to buy a Subaru at this point. You can get like any sort of any sort of medium to large dog. If you have a small dog, you can still put that in anything. But if you have a medium to large size dog, by law, you have to put a Subaru. If you're in Vermont and you have a dog and you don't have a Subaru, they just kick you out.
They just, they boot you right out.
But you're gone.
Mm-hmm. They're like, get out. We don't need you.
You lose your house. You lose all your belongings. And whoever comes in, they have someone just slide in, take over the dog, take over your life and with a Subaru. Probably an Outback.
That's it. You're done.
You had your chance. Mm-hmm. Time to move on.
Time to
let a professional do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. All right. Well, upon my return from Hawaii, I picked up a Mitsubishi Outlander plug-in hybrid. It's been a few years since I drove the Outlander plug-in hybrid, and that was the previous generation, which was, it was okay. It went some electric miles, and it was kind of the first plug-in hybrid crossover in the U.S. market, and it was actually surprisingly popular. It was one of the more popular vehicles that Mitsubishi sold. Now we've got the brand new generation, and we've driven the internal combustion version of the Outlander before, and this is basically a Nissan Rogue with a different body on it and an upgraded interior. And it's really, really nice. It is the first Mitsubishi in a long time that I really, really like. The interior is fantastic in this thing. I really like the design. I actually like the design better than the Rogue. The dimensions are exactly the same as the Rogue, but the design is very different, and I like it a lot. The only thing I would say that Mitsubishi should really reconsider is just ditch the third row. It is completely and utterly pointless.
Tell us what you really think, Sam. Don't hold back like that.
Have I mentioned that the third row cannot accommodate a human being unless they are sitting sideways across the seat?
I just want to see Robbie try and fit in the third, just for kicks.
When I opened up the back door and looked back there, there was the second row seats were literally right up against the third row seat cushions. You can slide the second row seats forward, but if you slide them forward enough that you could actually get a couple of feet back there, small feet, mind you, then you would only be able to accommodate small children in the second row.
You have a group of toddlers, you're golden.
Yeah. Yeah. That could work. If they're all in booster seats, or child seats, then you'd be fine.
Then you're good.
Otherwise, if you've got, anybody that can actually walk under their own power, at least offer the third row as a delete option. So that it's not taking up space in the cargo area
for all the people who can't actually use the darn thing.
Yeah. I just folded it down and left it at that, which is really the way it should be. Then you're taking up, I don't know, like 7 or 8 inches of vertical height, so a fair bit of volume in the cargo area. But aside from that, this thing was really impressive. The 2023 Outlander plug-in hybrid has a larger 20 kilowatt hour battery pack now.
Cool.
It's still not officially, it's still not showing up on the fueleconomy.gov site, but Mitsubishi says it'll get 38 miles of range on a charge. I took it on my usual test loop that is a mix of some highway, some interstate and some rural, 55 mile an hour highway, and some urban and suburban driving. And I put it in EV mode, EV priority mode. And by the time the engine came on, I had driven 47 miles.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is one of the best overachieving results I've ever gotten, especially with
good
the plug-in
for Mitsubishi.
Hybrid.
Go yeah. Mitsubishi, because they've had. You're right that they've had like
they've
not
had
the
some
best.
Yeah,
best. I'm gonna
and then they try to they
best.
Try to pull that thing where they had this version of the Outlander coming out, but then the previous generation Outlander showing up in the United States as a PHEV, and we're like 2 years ago, and everyone's like,
Yeah. So and this one. It's all wheel drive. So you've got a hybrid, conventional hybrid electric system on the front axle, plus an electric motor on the rear axle. Let's see how much power does it have. It's got quite a bit of power. I can't remember now. It's significantly more than the 200 horsepower that you get with the 2.5 liter naturally aspirated engine. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, it's got more than adequate performance. It's got quite good performance for a vehicle in this size class and, you know, this segment. Interestingly, this is also the only plug-in hybrid out there that has support for DC fast charging. But for some reason, Mitsubishi, since they are a Japanese brand, and you know they build their cars in Japan, they opted to put a CHAdeMO charging port on this thing. And it's also got the standard J1772 AC charging port. Okay. I took it over to the CHAdeMO charger over at the Electrify America station, and it charged on CHAdeMO at 22 kilowatts, which, you know, is surprisingly fast for a plug-in.
For a plug-in hybrid. And you can be the only plug-in hybrid at the supercharger.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Well, except you'd have to find a CHAdeMO to supercharger connector, adapter for that.
I'm sorry. It's a CHAdeMO at just a charging station.
Yeah. So there's that. The AC charging speed, however, was far less impressive. Only 3.5 kilowatts.
Wow.
Ooh. What?
Yeah.
Wait. So it'll do like 20 something DC.
22 DC and 3.5 AC.
3.5 AC,
aww. Which I guess is, I mean, you AC. Park it, you plug it in at night, it'll be fine by the next morning.
Yeah, you can get a full charge overnight.
But right. It's. What?
What? I've misunderstood something.
All right. Mm-hmm. Sure. Oh. I guess they just figure people are just going to plug it in with the wall socket. They're like, they're not going to.
Yeah, probably. That's probably what most people will actually do.
Yeah, so it's fine for that, I guess. Yeah. But it's just a weird, we'll do 20, but not on this side. Not with this port.
Not now. Not right this moment.
Oh, I found the power number. It's 248 horsepower combined, 332 pounds-feet of torque, which is quite good. It's much better than the Rogue gets. So if you want something that size that gets better performance and can go well over 40 miles on an electric charge, this is your vehicle. The one I had was also the SEL Premium. So that came equipped with the whatever Mitsubishi brand's Nissan's ProPilot Assist, the first generation ProPilot Assist. So it's the hands-on system. It's not the system that's on the Aria, which is hands-free. So it has the hands-on lane centering system. It also had heads-up display, which is nice to have. What else got on here? It has massaging seats, which were quite surprising in a vehicle at this price point. It had the what do they call this color now? It's a pearlescent white color. That I can't find it now. Let's see. But it was white and it's two-tone, so it's got a black roof with the white, this pearlescent white paint, which was very attractive. Looked very sharp. It's white diamond is what they call it.
Ooh.
Oh, like Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that is the name of her perfume, wasn't it?
Was it?
Did they still make that? It was White Diamonds, wasn't it?
I think it was.
I think he's right.
Wait, you keep talking, I'll look it up.
I'm Googling.
So White Diamond with a black roof.
That is it. That's Elizabeth Taylor's perfume.
And then the interior was black with like a baseball glove color, like a tan. Light brown color accents, contrast stitching on the seats, and a bar across the dashboard and the center console and on the armrests. Looked really good. It was very, very attractive. Very nice to drive, very pleasant to drive, very roomy in the first two rows. So I think this is a really impressive vehicle, a surprisingly impressive vehicle.
It's a wonderful two-road vehicle that just happens to have a third row view.
Yes.
That you should never, ever use.
Exactly.
You should never, ever, ever use.
Let me get back to... Unfortunately, there was no Monroney, so I just changed the page here, and let me get back to the summary here. All in, this one came to $51,375. for this one.
Oh, so with this one with massage seats.
This one, yeah, this one's pretty loaded. Cool. Yeah, getting massage seats and big sunroof and the Pro Pilot Assist and everything for you know just over $51,000 was pretty impressive. Nice. You know that included the SEL premium package, and lots of other good stuff. The white diamond black roof paint was an extra $995 bucks.
I can't stop thinking of Elizabeth Taylor now.
That's, sorry, everybody.
Good job, yeah, Robbie.
The thing is, you can get the Outlander plug-in hybrid starting at $40,000.
That's
it. So for 40 grand, you can get, you know, a decently roomy, you know, upper compact, you know, mid-size crossover with plenty of room for five people. And over 40 miles of electric driving range, which is, you know, you're not going to get any kind of tax credits on this one, unfortunately, because it is built in Japan. But it's still quite a reasonable price for what you're getting.
Yeah.
You know, it's more electric range than a RAV4 Prime. You might actually even have an easier time getting your hands on one of these.
Oh, yeah.
The RAV4 Primes are still hard to get.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're interested in something, you know, in this size class as a plug-in hybrid, I would definitely go take a look at the Outlander PHEV. Would you guys like to guess at the delivery charge on this one?
$995. $996. It's a 50%.
Robbie got it.
Of course he did.
$1,445.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We weren't close at all, though. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I just have to beat you. That doesn't matter if I'm close.
Yeah. Price is Right rules.
You don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun the slowest person in your group. I get
exactly.
It.
Yeah.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old. Soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters. Because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. All right. Let's get into some other stuff. The two of you went to Huntington Beach the other day to see something that looks pretty cool. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, we went to see the Ivy Buzz.
It's supposed to like bus, but buzz.
Buzz, get it? Because it's electric?
Because it's a buzz.
It's not a minivan, right? It's a bus.
It's a bus.
It's
not
a, it's a minivan. They're all minivans, to be honest. But it's a bus. Let's just say it's a bus. But
it looks cuter. It looks more bus-like. Hey, it looks
at least
like
if we call it a bus, people might actually buy it.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, people are going to buy it.
People are going to buy it. No, so this is so it's the ID Buzz is the 3-row version that's coming to the US. The 2-row version is what they had in Europe. So this is like the long wheelbase. So you get more room. And it looks like it's super cute. I mean, part of why you're buying this is that retro thing. Like everyone kept talking about the Beetle when the Beetle came back and it was like new Beetle, old Beetle. Is this kind of the same thing? Well, kind of, but not, you know, yeah. It's a very different audience than what the Beetle was looking for. This is, you know, they're not making a huge number of these. I want to say it was 100,000. I'm remembering
100,000 from the Hanover factory for the entire world.
Yeah, for everybody, for the entire world, 100,000. So it's going to be, I think, I honestly, at least initially, I think it's just going to be enthusiasts. People who were just in love with the original VW bus and want another one are going to say, I got to buy it. I got to buy it. And
gotta
they're just going to buy it. And they're going to buy it in 2 seconds after it goes on sale because there's only 100,000 of them out there. It's not going on sale.
Is that 100,000 of all, like the two row and the three row total?
Yeah, that's everything.
That's
the capacity. They said they might be able to go a little bit more. And yeah. Then after pressing the CEO Pablo about it, he's like, well, we'll see. Maybe we'll do another one. But they're like, it's a niche vehicle. It's a halo vehicle. There's no point in spinning up another factory for something that, you know, the demand might fall off after 2 or 3 years, which I you understand financially understand, but like when you want one in your driveway, like boo.
Yeah, exactly. And it does look cool. I mean, we didn't get to drive it, we just got to look at it. In fact, Robbie, you were sitting in the back of it in the third row, and you didn't, unlike the Mitsubishi Outlander PF, he could actually sit in
plenty of leg room. There was room between my knees and the thing, like I could actually go on a drive.
And you had room over your head. You didn't look like you were squished in there all kind of uncomfortable.
It is a party van.
And I love how the second row seats, like they slide, they have a really, I don't know what the number of inches it travels, but it really
7.4, 7.9.
It was 7.7.
It's a lot. Yeah.
So it slides and then it tips. So if you're trying to walk into the back seat, you fully can just step up and walk straight in. Like you don't need to turn your body at an angle at all. So it's very, very accessible third row and usable because Robbie sat back there. I think that's kind of neat. And I think I like it has cute features like the sliding. There's dual power sliding doors on all of them, a standard feature. In fact, the standard features are ridiculous, but the door has a little window, a little power window. You push a button and it slides, not up and down, left, right, like boop, little square door.
It looks like it's the same kind of window that they use in the back window of most of the pickup trucks now.
It made me think of a Fisker's dog window for some reason, a little tiny dog window.
It's like a little porthole into the outside world.
Portal. A window within a window.
Window within a window. So that was kind of neat. And it is like, oh my gosh, the feature list is they were going down the features like dual power sliding doors and you have this large infotainment and your seats are heated and your seats are ventilated.
And it's all standard. So you're just like listening and you're like, well, price going up. But there goes the price again. There goes the price again. There goes the price again.
$1,000, $1,000, $1,000. So they didn't tell us price. So we were guessing. And I feel like the general consensus from the collected automotive media was we're going to start at least $60,000.
Yeah.
It's going to be give or take. That's going to be
for the rear wheel drive, for the, which I feel like just get that.
So, but it looks really neat. It looks fun. It, in terms of style, it looks exactly like you would want the modern version of the Volkswagen bus to look, I think. What did you think, Robbie? Do you think it looks
I've never been in a press anything where everyone in the room was like, I want one of these. We're all the journalists because we can, we drive a lot of cars. Sometimes we drive very fancy cars. You can be on a McLaren launch or a Lamborghini launch or an S-Class launch. But not everyone in that room wants that car. They're going to drive the car. They're going to judge it based on where it belongs in the market. But the reality is I don't want a Lamborghini. I'd be terrified of a Lamborghini. Someone's going to drown. It's like, you got to be careful when you drive it. I mean, no, I don't want a Lamborghini. But everyone's like, oh, when are we going to get it? We are
everybody.
Car. Everyone we know wants this car. So they're, I think, it's a smart halo car for them.
Yeah. And it was cool the way they did it, where they had it, what was it? National Volkswagen Bus Day? Is that
International Volkswagen Bus Day? I think they figured out I don't know. I didn't understand how that worked either. Like they just called somebody, and I don't know if it's state or
I don't know, but it was a day. They gave us a fancy poster. There's a pin.
Oh, where is that poster?
Yeah, and it was very cool. They had like, what was neat at the event was they had a really slick event. They had it like right on Huntington Beach, and there was a big stage, and they had music, and there was some place called Woodstock Radio out of New York. And they were there broadcasting, and it was really super fun and all this fun food. But then they had all these people who had original VW buses from various iterations of, this is a very fancy one that I've redone to look nothing like the original, or this is original right down to the paint color and everything else. So there were some really, if you were into that, my gosh, the nostalgia.
Well, there's a great video. Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes. TFL, Tommy Micah, Roman's son, did a video. He did a walk around of the show, you know, talking to a bunch of people, seeing all the different bus variations.
It was so cool. You know, it was one of the funny ones was, one of the guys from Kia actually has a VW bus, a vintage one. And he was there with his, which was fantastic.
James.
And so, yes. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm not here as a Kia. I'm no Kia guy today. I'm just VW bus guy today. Like, don't ask me any Kia questions.
Yeah.
But his has been in his family. His parents brought him home from the hospital in that when he was a baby. It has been in his family his entire life. I'm like, but that's the kind of nostalgia this car instills. Like, my parents kept this car. It needed repair at one point. We did that. This is the car that has literally been in my family. One family has ever owned it, and it's his family. Most people can't say that about their cars, but you can say that about a bus because it's just so darn fun.
Yeah, it was really great. And you know what's interesting is like they've seen what happened with the Bronco, with the price gouging.
Yeah.
With the price gouging. And CEO Pablo DC was just like, we don't want people paying more for this bus than what it costs. We don't know how
it's already going to be expensive.
We're going to talk to the dealers. We're having meetings with the dealers today. This was last Thursday. We're having meetings with them. We're going to figure out how to do this, but we don't want that. We don't want price gouging because it's not fair to the consumers. It's not fair to the people who are long-term, you know, Volkswagen owners. It's very, so we'll see how that works out, but it's very refreshing for him to be like, no, you're not paying more than what the price is for this vehicle. Yeah. Whereas everyone else is a little bit more wishy-washy. We're like, well, you know, we don't want people to, but you know, if they're really bad about it, we'll give them fewer cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be nice to see that because it generates such ill will on the behalf of the public. They, mm-hmm. they don't care whether it's the dealership or whether it's Ford or whether it's dealership or it's Volkswagen. You're like, dang, you big giant corporate conglomerate for taking money out of my pocket just because you can gouge me and because I don't have a choice. Like it's not the best look for, even if it's not Ford's fault, it's still not the best look for Ford.
Yeah, it's not Ford's fault.
People see the blue oval on the building or the VW logo or whatever. And you know, they think of the manufacturer, not the individual that owns the dealership.
Right. Yeah. And it really is on the dealership, but that's not how people see it.
Yeah. So that's really nice. But yeah, I was a little hesitant because I liked the two row that I drove in Europe. And I was like, why can't we just get the shorter wheelbase? Why can't we get the two row? I don't need a third seat. But it turns out you can just take the third seat out and it's really easy.
Yeah.
Just like yank on it and just blump, blump. And it's all folded up. It's all nice and compact. So you can just yank that thing out. If you, for whatever reason, you don't want that third seat in there, and you can just store it in your garage. There's plenty of room for your dogs, for your kayaks, for your bicycles, for your surfboards.
All your stuff.
All your things. You can put them all in the back.
What about a Westie? Are they going to do a Westie? Westphalia?
They talked about a lot about special versions. And so we're you know, a California or whatever, the camping version. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have special versions that come out over the 5 to 6 year life cycle of this vehicle, of this generation. So every year it feels like they're going to have like a special version that comes out. So if you don't like this, if you wanted, you know, a camping version or you wanted something else, don't worry.
Just hold on.
This could make a pretty interesting overlanding van.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Well, they said you can still, the way the seats fold, they have them where they folded all the seats down, the second row, the third row, and then it's just sort of like little load floor thing that's like just kind of sits in the back, like you can screw into the behind it. Mm-hmm. So you can make it flat all the way back. So you could stick a mattress in there.
Yeah,
like, it'll fit right in there and you could snooze and have it just all one big nice flat space. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's we'll see if we can afford it.
And And it should get close to 300 miles of range. EPA, they said
260 for the two-wheel drive and 252 give or take for the all-wheel drive. That's the 91 kilowatt hour range, which I'm like, well, the size of the van.
Yeah, I mean, it's taller than an ID4.
Yeah, it's taller. Mm-hmm. It's a big car. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's 282 horsepower, 406 pound-feet of torque for the rear-wheel drive. And then with the all-wheel drive, you get 330 horsepower. And they didn't give us a torque number for that one.
And since you can fold those seats down, you know, even if you got to charge a little more often, just go and...
You can take a nap.
Fold the seats down, take a nap while you're charging.
Exactly.
Be all nice and refreshed.
8 USB-C charger, like charge points in it, and like you can just everything you own, just put it all in there. it charges at 200 kilowatts. That's the top end. I think nominal ones. Yeah. So it's charging quick. It's, you know, if you're charging at 200, I feel like, all right, you're fine with 250 miles of range.
Yeah.
It's when you're charging to 250 miles of range and you're getting like 50 kilowatts and you're on a road trip. You're like, oh.
And you're like, no, dang it, no. Yeah.
All right. Well, I didn't get to go to Huntington Beach, but I did get to go to the M1 Concourse last week.
Which is pretty darn cool.
Honda, yeah, the Detroit Grand Prix was this weekend. And so ahead of the race, Honda brought some fun stuff out to M1 Concourse and invited a bunch of us out there. They brought their new prototype electric racing carts, go-karts. They brought a fleet of Civic Type R's to try out the new Honda Log R 2.0 app. And they also brought the Beast, which is the CRV hybrid racer that I think we talked about a couple months ago when they announced this thing. And we actually got to go for rides in the Beast. This thing is just insane. Yeah. they took a CRV body shell. So it's a steel body shell straight up, you know, from a stock CRV, and they did some modifications to it. They cut it up. They sliced it in half. They built a tube frame chassis for this thing, at Honda American Racing Team, which is a race team of, Honda engineers, based at their R&D center in Ohio. And they go racing on weekends. So Hart built this thing. They have the 2.2 liter turbo twin turbo V6 Honda IndyCar engine from HPD. And they added a hybrid system to it, a supercapacitor hybrid system, which is, it's not exactly the same as the system that's going to be on IndyCars next year, but it's similar.
Is it like the Lamborghini? With the supercapacitor in it?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
And they put together the system in house from a bunch of parts. Mm-hmm. And so
some things lying around.
Yeah.
Some random parts.
Yeah. You know, so it's conceptually similar to what's going to be in the Indy cars, but that the Indy car system is going to be packaged a little nicer, you know, since they didn't have to worry so much about the room in this thing. You know, they didn't worry too much about the packaging. So it's well over 800 horsepower. The front suspension is straight off of the NSX GT3 car, race car. And then, you know, you've got lots of carbon fiber in there and the racing seats and everything. And we had to put on fire suits and a helmet.
Ooh,
with a Hans device.
Yeah.
And then climb into this thing and have somebody strap us in with the 5-point harness. And then they turned on the GoPro. So we've got video of our faces as we're going around the track for a couple of laps. Man, was this thing fun.
It's just you with a giant grin on your face. Yeah, pretty much
which
the
you,
videos.
Which you can't really see. You can only see it in the eyes because we're
really
full
chubby
face
cheeks. Yeah. Your cheeks always look puffy when you try and smile like you can't do it.
But yeah, no, this thing was a hoot. You know, they leave the pits on electricity, you know, so it's the engine's off as they're pulling out of the pits. And then as soon as he hits the track, then engine fires up and a couple of really hot laps. And this thing is just wickedly fast, slick racing tires. I was talking to somebody from Honda over the weekend at the IndyCar race. And she told me that, this thing, because it is essentially a race car, it's not inexpensive to run. It cost them $20,000 a day to operate this thing.
Oh my Lord.
Which, you know, I mean, it's comparable to what it costs to run an Indy car.
Wow.
Yeah, because the tires, you know, the tires don't last very long. You know, the fuel that they use and all the processes that they have to go through to warm up the engine. You know, it's not like your street engine, you know, where you just, you know, press the button and fire it up.
Boom, it works. Like,
you know, this thing, you know, they have to go through a whole rigmarole to gradually warm up the engine, get all the fluids warmed up, you know, and then get it going. But once it's going, oh, it sounds so wild. So that was fun. Then we also got to spend some time with these electric racing carts. So they're racing go-karts, top speed of about 45 miles an hour. And racing carts, you know, they're pretty loud because they usually use two-stroke engines. And, you know, if you've ever, I mean, if you've gone go-karting, you know, when you're done, you know, you get off the cart and, you know, you smell like gas exhaust.
Yeah. You smell like the 70s, really.
You smell like the 70s.
Pretty much, yeah. So what they've done is they've developed a racing cart, taking advantage of some of the technology that they have in Asia, in a number of Asian markets, for their electric scooters. So it's got swappable batteries. And they have a standardized swap system. There's a couple in Asia. There's a couple of different companies that are doing these battery swap systems for scooters and not so much for e-bikes with these. But the big one is Gogoro, and they have operations in Taiwan and India and a bunch of other Southeast Asian countries, where you pay for a subscription to use the battery. And basically when the battery runs down, you just go, they have these kiosks all over the place, and you take your depleted battery out, you shove it in the kiosk, and you grab a fresh one and shove it in your scooter, and then you're on your way. And Honda is doing the same kind of thing. It's their EGX system, they call it. The cart uses two of these batteries, and they sit kind of beside your hips on either side of the seat, in the go-kart. The batteries weigh about 23 pounds each. They'll run the cart for about 30 minutes, which, you know, we did five or 6 minute sessions with these things. And trust me, after 30 minutes, you will need a break.
You're ready to get out. you're on the ground.
You're done.
You're suspension.
There's no suspension. There's no steering assist. You know, it takes quite a bit of effort to steer these things, and you're flicking these things around. They're rear wheel drive. There's no front brakes, just rear brakes. No regen on these things. But they are super quick, you know, because you have that electric torque, and they use the same motors that they're using on their electric scooters. So it's a 2 kilowatt motor, electric motor. And these things are wicked fast. And, you know, they've got a fleet of them that they're taking around and they're testing right now, you know, having people evaluate it. They haven't decided yet if they're going to put these in production.
Oh.
But, you know, they'll probably cost, if they build them, they'll probably cost somewhere around $10,000, which is not bad for a racing cart.
Yeah, no, it's not that bad.
It's fun. Yeah, it's a fun little toy.
And the thing is, you know, racing carts, the engines in racing carts, you know, basically you do one race and then the engine needs a rebuild. So, you know, it can actually get quite expensive if you're going to get into kart racing. You know, these things, because they're electric, you know, there's essentially zero maintenance that you have to do on it other than replacing tires. So these things are going to be a lot cheaper to run than a gas powered racing cart. They're just as quick, a lot of fun to drive. And, you know, after your heats, you take the batteries, pull the two batteries out, stick them in a charger. You can have extra batteries, you know, so, you know, if you're sharing the cart with somebody else, you know, they can just pop in a fresh pair of batteries and you're good to go.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty nice. I'm sad I didn't get to do this.
I know, right?
There was a Honda. Like there was like years ago, there was a Honda racing. What was it? The lawnmower.
And I remember that.
They emailed me like, "Hey, do you want to go do this?" I'm like, "Yes, I want to do this." Like, "How tall are you?" And I told them how tall I am. They're
"Oh no, you're too tall."
Too tall. Yeah.
Oh no.
I can't sit in an F1. I tried to sit in an F1 once, an F1 car, and they were like, the PR person was like, oh, you want to sit in? I'm like, yeah. And they looked, and the driver looked at me and looked at the car and just
He's
shook
like,
their head.
No, no.
I was like, okay.
Aww,
yeah. Being tall isn't great.
Yeah, the Honda Racing lawnmower had 190 horsepower. Would go from 0 to 60 in 6.2 seconds.
Man, I was so sad. They felt bad, too. I think they called me on the phone. They're like, hey, you really? I'm like, how tall are you? They're like, okay, so it's not like you're on the edge. You're, like, way too tall.
Yeah, like, he's a smidge over. He's a foot over, people. We can't do it.
Well, thanks for being excited about our car.
It's
heartbreaking.
And then the other thing we got to do was drive the Type R's on the track to try out the Log R app, the new version of it.
How'd that
work? So there's two components of it. There's one part that's built into the infotainment system. And the original version of Log R they had on the previous gen Type R, they launched it midway through, I think in 2020 or something. They added the Log R app. And now they've got a version 2. And then there's a component that runs on your phone, on your smartphone. So you mount your phone in a bracket. You can use that as a camera. You hit the logger. You pair up the phone and the car. And when you start logging, you go out and do your track time, end logging, and then it uploads that data to the cloud. And then you can sync the app, sync the video that you recorded on your phone with the data that it's captured from all the vehicle sensors. So you've got all your accelerometer data, speed, throttle position, braking, calculates things like friction circles and everything else. You can sync that and it'll create an overlay of that data on the video. So you can see as you're driving.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty slick. The only problem I had with it is the syncing process. For some reason, it runs on the phone. So rather than like uploading the video to the cloud and syncing it there and then downloading it, it does the syncing on your phone, and it has to do it in the foreground for some reason. So basically,
you have to keep the app running.
Yeah. So for I think it was about a 10-minute session. It takes like 2 hours
to
sync it for some reason, because it's re-rendering the video and overlaying all the data on top of
whatever your connection is where you're at and blah blah blah.
Yeah, and then if your phone rings or you do anything else with your phone,
you're stuck.
Then it crashes and it stops doing the syncing. And you have to start over again. So that part didn't work great, but still it's fun. And you get scores, based on your driving. So it was pretty slick. If you're getting a Type R and you're going to do some track day stuff with it, definitely recommend that you try that out.
Very cool.
All right. Lordstown Endurance.
That's horrifying.
That?
Yeah.
Apparently, it actually doesn't have very much endurance.
Lordstown endurance.
Oh gosh, Lordstown.
Yeah. So it finally got its EPA range rating after they delivered like 31 of them to customers.
Who are these people?
I probably fleets that they gave them to and said, "Here, please try this.
Drive this. Yeah.
Please buy some."
Gosh,
we'll give you one to try out. It's rated at only 174 miles of range.
What is it? The
104?
What's the battery?
It's 109 kilowatt hours.
Oh my gosh.
So it's bigger than the battery in the standard range F-150 Lightning, which gets 240 miles from a 98 kilowatt hour battery. This gets 174 from a 109 kilowatt hour battery. It also has only just over 1,000 pounds of payload capacity, about 8,000 pounds of towing capacity. Yeah, basically. Well, no, Maverick's got 1,500 pounds of payload.
Yeah.
Same. So, yeah, this thing is basically pretty useless. As if anybody, you know, was even really seriously considering buying one of these before. Now there's really no reason.
Now they're
to buy
done.
One.
No one's going to buy one. I don't, not a soul.
I mean, I've been talking about how Lordstown's a boondoggle since the beginning. It's what was the company they had before?
Workhorse.
So they had Workhorse. Workhorse was making things that never delivered to anybody. And then Workhorse sort of didn't dissolve, but then they became Lordstown. And
no, the guy
Lordstown has to pay Workhorse the a CEO, license.
What?
Yeah, oh the CEO and founder of Workhorse, a guy named Steve Burns, left Workhorse, founded a new company, Lordstown Motors, when after GM announced that they were going to shut down the Lordstown assembly plant where they built the Cruze. And back in the day, they also built the Vega.
The Vega.
Oh, gosh.
He started a new company called Lordstown Motors. And Workhorse had a design for an electric pickup truck. He licensed the IP from Workhorse. Which he was no longer CEO of, but still owned some stock in.
Exactly. The whole thing is a boondoggle.
Right. And then, you know, he hadn't actually raised any money for Lordstown and didn't have any money to buy the plant. But when GM announced that they were shutting down the plant, the former guy in the White House got so angry and was tweeting up a storm about, you know, why, how GM was so terrible for America and everything because they're shutting down factories in the U.S. You know, in order to shut him up, GM gave Steve Burns $40 million, of which $20 million was meant to pay GM back for the factory. And then the other $20 million was supposed to be initial working capital. Yeah,
for he gave him money to buy their factory. It's like if you're selling your house and you gave the person the money plus extra.
Yeah.
You're selling your house for $500,000. Here's $1 million.
Just because we like you.
The whole thing. It's just a
wow.
It's such a boondoggle, and it's every time you like we bring up Lordstown, I'm like, oh man. So it's a Faraday future of America. Yeah. It's America's Faraday future. Just like every time you like kind of look into it, like, oh, God, what is going on here financially? Oh, this is a scam.
Now totally. I get it.
So they spent they delivered 30 of them to somebody.
Yeah.
And
then they had to stop because they had another battery fire.
Oh, man.
Okay. So anyway, Lordstown is still technically a going concern, but you know, who knows for how long.
It's still technically a company.
Yes. They haven't declared bankruptcy yet. They did do a 1-for-15 reverse stock split last week, so that they could remain listed on the NASDAQ because their stock price had been below $1 a share for too long. And NASDAQ said, you know, if you can't get your price to $1 a share, we're going to delist you. And so they did a 1-for-15 stock reverse split to get it up to $3. But it's been declined. It's continued to decline ever since.
Wait, it's 15. Was it 30 cents?
It was about 30 cents a share. It was about 30 cents a share. So it's back down today. It closed at $3.03 a share. So it's actually compared to 1 month ago, it is down 45% compared to a month ago. So it's only a matter of time before it's back below $1 a share again.
Yeah.
All right.
It's not great. On that note.
Okay. Let's talk about other stuff that has some interesting pricing. Tesla tweeted out late last week that the Model 3, all versions of the Model 3, are now eligible for full $7,500 federal tax credit. They, of course, gave no explanation as to how they've achieved this, because previously, the cheapest version of the Model 3, the standard range rear-wheel drive, was not eligible for the tax credit, or it was only eligible for $3,750 based on battery components, because they assembled the battery packs in the U.S. But it couldn't get the full $7,500 because the cells within that battery were lithium iron phosphate cells from CATL, a Chinese company, and those cells were made in China, and those are not eligible for tax credits. Supposedly, Tesla is claiming it's now eligible for a $7,500 tax credit. They're not saying how. So the only realistic way that this could be anything but a lie is if they have reverted back from using the CATL batteries to going back to the Panasonic 2170 cells and putting those back in the base Model 3. That's probably what they've done, but we don't know for sure because Tesla dissolved their PR department about 4 years ago.
Who needs PR?
And they don't answer questions.
Correct.
If you send an email to press at Tesla.com, it just goes into a black hole and never gets answered and nobody ever sees it.
No one sees it. Never. You never get an answer back.
Or maybe Elon checks that inbox once in a while just to laugh at us.
That fool emailed us.
So it's 40,000. You get 7,500 off plus if you have other state and regional things, you can get it down to 30,000.
Yeah.
For a Model 3. So you're finally getting the $35,000 Model 3 sort of.
Sort of. Yeah.
Sort of. 272. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been I was just always telling people, I should just wait 18 months. Tesla will improve their manufacturing process. And then I just gave up saying that.
All right. Last one for this week is Ford Blue Cruise. A couple of weeks ago, they changed their pricing for Blue Cruise. And they've gone to a subscription model, which is more like what Tesla offers for their enhanced autopilot and FSD packages. Blue Cruise was always technically a subscription. And what they did when they launched on the Mach-E, all but the base level Mach-E came standard with the hardware required for Blue Cruise. And you got, when you bought the Mach-E up until recently, you would get 3 years of the Blue Cruise software and updates. And then after that, you would have to pay for a subscription to continue getting the software updates for that. And then on the F-150, when they launched it on there, so there was no breakout. They never broke out the pricing on the Mach-E. On the F-150, because the F-150 launched before Blue Cruise was available, they offered the hardware package for $1,600. And then it was $600 to pay for the software once the software was available. And again, that was for 3 years. So it's $2,200 for 3 years. What they've now done, starting with the Mach-E, is on the Mach-E, all Mach-E's now get all the Blue Cruise hardware built in as standard equipment, just like Tesla does with their autopilot hardware. It's all built into every car. And now you just pay for the software. And the software is now $2,100 for 3 years. So you get the three-month trial period. And then if during that three-month trial period you subscribe, it's $2,100 or $700 a year. After the three-month trial period, if you then decide you want to get it, then it's $800 a year for the subscription. So it... technically, the price hasn't really gone up, but it's they've just redistributed how the price is working now, and that works out to $800 a year. It's like $65 a month.
Yeah, per month.
Which is quite a bit less than the enhanced autopilot or FSD, which is like $200 a month.
Yeah,
for that. And with Blue Cruise, you can actually take your hands off the wheel officially.
So
details, the small detail. That's not much of a difference, Sam.
It's just when you're in the car and you're like, I'm not going to pay. I think it's $75 a month, $300 a year.
I think so. Yeah. I was just looking at double checking. Maybe it said 75.
You can pay monthly or annually. And I think if it's annually, if you pay annually, it's $800 a month. If you choose to go month by month, then it's a little bit more, just like most stuff is.
Yeah, most of it. So I don't know. I don't know how much. I mean, it depends on how much you use Blue Cruise.
Would you pay for it?
No, God, no. I'm not paying $75 a month so I can take my hands off the wheel, because I never take my hands off the wheel. That's the problem, is I take it my hands off the wheel for like, hey, look, I can take my hands off the wheel for video and whatnot. But when I'm actually driving, I'm using Blue Cruise and Super Cruise and all the, you know, BMW system. Where am I going to put my hands? It's like, I'm like Will Ferrell in like Talladega Nights. I don't know what to do with my hands. I don't know what to do with my hands. So I just end up putting them on the wheel.
Yeah.
Like, where do I just put them in my lap? Just like, just sitting there flopping down. Like,
yeah. Cross your arms. Yeah.
Cross my arms. Like, I'm.
Can
I
eat
just, yeah. I end up just putting them back
eat
on.
Eat a burrito.
Yeah. Eat a burrito, I guess.
You eat
but
a
no,
burrito.
But then, like, the in car monitor sees that I'm doing something.
You just got to make sure you don't get the burrito in front of your eyes.
Yeah, I guess. Just so, it's nice for when you're, yeah, there you go. So, if you are, like, let's say I have a Mach-E and I decide I'm going to go on a long road trip, maybe I pay for it for that month. You know what I mean? Just like, I'm going to be on
the internet. Just do it? Could you just do it for 1 month and then cancel it?
Okay, yes, you can.
So you could just do it for the summer when you take that family road trip then.
Yeah, do it for the times you need it. If you need it all the time, let's say you just have a hell commute, which, you know, many people do. If $75 is going to make you happier or make you, reduce your stress level every time you get home at night, then maybe it's probably worth it. You know, it's cheaper than therapy. I can tell you that. No therapist is going to charge you $75 a month. So it's whatever.
And to be fair, Ford did reduce the price of the Mach-E at the same time that they did this. You know, so this was all part of the price cut they did a month or so ago. So now you're paying less up front for the Mach-E, and depending on which trim you get, it's like several thousand dollars less. You're getting the hardware built in. And so if you just want to use Blue Cruise occasionally, you can just sign up when you want it, and you're going to end up paying a lot less. What Ford obviously is hoping is that you will forget that you subscribe to it and you'll just keep paying for it in
like a gym.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Or your Max streaming subscription.
Yeah, that why do they make you would get another app? And then the app is just as bad as the HBO Max app. I mean, it was just the HBO Max app was a joke. And they're like, well, you have to get this new app for Max. And they're like, all right, fine. At least this one's better. No, it's the same like four people who they've locked in a closet and said, make our app. But can we have some more money? No.
But like, they did change it from purple to blue.
Yeah, I guess at some point when you're clicking down on the little carousels, all of a sudden the selected carousel will be below what you can see, so you can't see what you've selected. That's what it's doing right now to my Roku.
Oh, that's fantastic!
So I can't see what I've selected, so I'm just like, I'm just gonna put on Netflix.
Oh my god, that's bad.
Ugh. Yeah.
All right. Let's answer some listener questions. First up is Anthony, and this one came in by email at feedback@wheelbearings.media. You can send your questions and comments in there. You can also record your questions if you want. Send us an audio file, or you can send them in the Discord. You can also now leave comments on YouTube, because Wheel Bearings is on YouTube now.
Yes.
So you can listen to it. In the regular YouTube app, you can listen to it in the YouTube Music app. It's all there now. You can leave your comments there. Although I probably won't read them there. So if you really want us to see your questions, send us an email or drop something in the Discord.
It's Discord and email are better.
Yeah. So anyway, Anthony says, I know you're a Mazda Miata owner, referring to me. I've always wanted one. There's one on Hemmings right now that has caught my attention. One owner, 36,000 mile, 1990. So that's the same year as mine, with about just over half the miles that mine has. And I was looking at this listing, and it's pretty nice. It's a bright red one. This car looks really good.
Oh, he's going to buy it underneath you, from underneath you, Anthony.
No. I already have one. I don't need to buy it, because I already have one.
You can always have two.
Yeah. But it says, it's easy to get caught up in the frenzy of bidding. In your opinion, what is too much for this car? I know the old saying that something is worth whatever someone is willing to give for it, but I don't want to be foolish. I would have to get a personal loan to purchase this car, so I want to make sure I do my homework. If you take time to answer this email, thanks in advance. If you can't, I totally understand. I know you're busy. So we are answering it right now.
Yes.
So at this moment in time, the like bidding this on this car on Hemmings, as we record this on Monday, June 5th, at about 6:55 p.m., is $5,209, which is a really good price for this car.
But the reserve has not been met.
The reserve has not been met. There is a unknown reserve on this car. There's only two bids so far, and there's two weeks left to go on this auction.
Yeah.
So I looked it up on Hagerty, looked up the valuations. For a 1990 Miata, in concourse condition, they currently peg the value at $29,800, which is just ridiculous for a Miata. That is almost three times what this car cost when it was new.
That's off the showroom.
Yeah.
Like, and then you stuck it in a hermetically sealed like room, and then you just like left it there.
And in excellent condition, it's $17,800. And you know, based on the low mileage on this thing, at least, I mean, you can't tell really from the photos. But I mean, you know, this thing looks spotless. So, you know, it's probably going to be excellent condition. They rated it 17,000, or current valuation is $17,800. Good condition, 9,200. Fair condition, 5,100. Personally, I would not pay more than 10 grand for an early NA Miata. I mean, granted, this one is very low mileage. Which, you know, makes it more, but you know, as much as I love the Miata, I don't think I would pay more than $10,000 for one.
Yeah.
And
I'm looking at it. I'm like looking at all the pictures now.
I mean, that seems like fair, Sam. I'm bad with used car pricing. So
that's what it's worth to me.
Right.
Yeah. This one, you know, my guess is, you know, since it's listed on Hemmings, the reserve is probably well over $10,000. It's probably closer to 20. So, you know, we'll watch this one and see how high it goes. But, for me, 10 grand would be a good price. But you know, it's, as you said, it's worth whatever it is, whatever you're willing to pay for it.
Yeah. That really does come down to, I mean, especially if you're taking out a loan to buy it, if it makes your heart happy enough that you feel like you want it and it's right, then go ahead and do it. But you know, it's so hard because everybody's.
If you're willing to pay 20 grand for a 33 year old car, hey, good for you.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Emil. Says with a lot of new cars, the 0-60 times have been dramatically improved over gas engine cars. And with more and more of them looking like regular cars, it's hard to tell that it's a fast car and will sneak up on you sneak up on me really fast when I'm trying to safely switch lanes. With gas cars, you know that it's a fast car. Well, not necessarily, but yeah. Anyway,
sleepers, man.
Yeah, it'll be a sports car, a big luxury sedan, or a small modded car that is super loud. But with electric cars, they quietly sneak up on you. Typically, you have an expectation or feeling of how fast a car will approach you. But with more electric cars on the road, it's very unpredictable, both for drivers and pedestrians. With great power comes great responsibility. And with fast electric cars becoming more accessible, I feel that more and more of them will be getting in the wrong hands. Think young teenagers. What are your thoughts on this?
At slow speeds, they make a noise. Road noise tire noise is still a thing. It's not like, you know, it's not like they're just whisper quiet.
Yeah, but if you're driving down the road, I mean, if you're driving down the highway, you're not going to hear that.
I mean, you with experience, you're able to determine the speed of a car that's coming. Yeah. That's sort of like the thing that you have to deal with. That said, I mean, young teenagers are going to be young teenagers, and EV torque is probably the best thing that's ever happened to them in their minds, and the worst thing that's ever happened, according to their parents. So I think there's something to be said for, you know, maybe like automakers, like, okay, we get it. EVs go fast. Slow your roll.
Slow it down, boys. Yeah.
We don't need everything. And, you know, I talked to Lamborghini about this, and they're like, going from 0 to 60 in an EV, like really fast, it doesn't matter anymore because everyone can do it. Kia's like, hey, look what we can do.
Yeah.
And now it's more about like how the car drives and what you're offering the driver beyond, you know, just going fast in a straight line. But I think there's also the opportunity for somebody to say, hey, you know, there's a teenager mode on this, and we're going to restrict a bit of the torque. We're not going to restrict it to where it's dangerous to get on the freeway, but we're going to restrict it to where it's the speed of, like, you know, a gas Toyota Tercel. You're getting where you need to go, but you're not burning through wheels.
Toyota Tercel is your benchmark. No faster than this.
No faster. Well,
hey, for a teenage driver, I was actually just I wrote something yesterday for Honda had an announcement today that we didn't talk about, but they've got a teen driver coaching app that they've just launched. And, you know, one of the things mentioned in the release was 25% of traffic fatalities, or sorry, one third of traffic fatalities are drivers under 25 years of age.
Wow.
You know, it's, you know, the phrase infant mortality, you know, is quite literal here. Mm-hmm. You are far more likely to die in a car crash in your first 3 or 4 years of driving than for the rest of your life.
Wow.
And I mean, as someone who used to jump a car on regular roads as a teenager, yeah.
Teenagers are dumb. God. What can we say?
When I was a teenager, I was a dumb.
I did it.
Same things with cars that I'm not going to go jump in my BRZ, but I would jump in the early 90s. I would jump my 90 Honda Civic. Why not?
Because you could.
In our cars. And speaking of Toyota Tercel, my friend jumped his sister's brand new Toyota Tercel in a race once.
Oh my God.
It was the same road. We drove mountain roads. That's how we drove all the time. And yeah, he got that thing. He got it a hot pretty high that one time.
Oh my God.
And I was like, that's a little too much. I'm not going to do that to my car.
You saved it.
Yeah.
Good call. Look at you.
I still jumped it, but I jumped it responsibly.
He jumped it responsibly.
So yeah, maybe we figure out a way to keep, you know, teenagers from utilizing all the torque that EV will offer.
Because they have the teen driver stuff that lets you, who is the teen driver thing? GM.
GM, yeah. In OnStar, they've got a teen driver mode.
You can set things.
And Ford does too with their MyKey.
You can set things so your kid can only turn the radio so high, and there's things like you can't start the car or something. One of them, you can't start the car if you don't buckle. Like, they do different things to make sure that you're not the idiot teenager that we all are, you know,
or were
when we were teens. Like, they keep you from doing that. So I feel like maybe there should be just a way to, idiot teen at the wheel. please throttle them down.
You get your key fob. Your key fob is, you know, it's still, you're still getting where you want to go. You're still going to get to the dance. The kids have dances still at school. I'm assuming they do.
I think so.
I don't remember going to dance. I remember just going to the empty field a lot. But yeah, so something.
Yeah,
so I understand where Emil is coming from.
Yeah, for teenage. I wrote an article a couple of years ago, basically, you know, saying that, okay, EV manufacturers, you've proved your point. EVs can be way faster than gas engine cars. It's time to stop. The 1,000 horsepower, sedans and, SUVs, it's enough.
It's enough. Yeah. If you're buying a BMW, sure, fine. If I'm buying, if I'm buying like an inexpensive Kia, not the EV, not, you know, the EV6 GT, but just the regular EV6, maybe I don't need to really go. Maybe my Kona shouldn't be like, maybe I shouldn't be able to spin my wheel every time I step.
Your Kona down. Go like a bat.
It'll spin the wheels for like a half a block if I just stomp on.
Well, that's probably as much a factor of the
wheels,
rolling resistance tires.
Low rolling resistance tires. But, you know, kids are like, woo. Yeah.
All right. Chad L. Asked, started a thread in the Discord, and there's a bunch of responses, and I thought it'd be good to chat about this a little bit. Looking to make the switch to electric in the not-so-near future, and looking at install options for at-home charging. has me thinking about charger placement. It's been discussed before on the show that ICE fires still a number of those in BEVs, but I'm still wondering how safe charging inside a garage truly is. Would prefer an indoor install given the cold winters where I am. For those of you with BEVs at home, how comfortable are you with in-garage charging?
I would be comfortable if I didn't have all my tools. My garage is just full of saws and whatnot. But I live in California. I live in Northern California. We just charge outside, but I would be totally fine with charging inside.
I have a charger in my garage. I mean, I put it in my garage. I live in the Northeast. Mine's inside my garage. I had an electrician put one in. I made sure it wasn't, something that somebody just did halfway, it was done right. And I feel no less nervous about doing that than the other electric stuffs that plugged into my house could go at any minute.
I charge outside. My charger is inside the garage, just inside the garage door. But because my Miata and my wife's car are in the garage, the EVs I drive are in the driveway. But otherwise, if I owned an EV, we'd be charging it inside the house. Some things to think about, absolutely, do not do the charger install yourself unless you are a licensed electrician. Right.
You do see people doing that. I'm like, you're a nutcase. You don't want to mess that up. What That's stupid. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if you're putting a level two charger in there, have a licensed electrician do it. Make sure they use copper wiring. This is something in the Discord thread. Somebody mentioned Tom Malogny's YouTube channel, State of Charge. There's some really good videos on there. I'll include that in the show notes. One of the things that has been found is if you get an outlet. So there's two ways you can get a charger in your garage. One is to hardwire it, so it's hardwired directly to the circuit from your panel, or you can get a NEMA 1450 outlet, which is a 40 amp, 4-pin outlet. It's basically a dryer outlet. If you do that, you want to make sure that it's done with copper wiring rather than aluminum wiring, because the aluminum wiring does expand and contract a little more, and it can get loose, and then you can get short circuits, sparks, and that's not good.
That was actually, I had aluminum wiring in my house when we bought it, and the inspector said, walk away. That's how much he hated aluminum wiring. He said, have them redone with copper or walk away. I was like, really? We redid it. Houses have burned down for having that, just having that for outlets, regular outlets, plug it in your car,
So get a licensed electrician, put it in a good place, and make sure you get a UL approved charger, Underwriters Labs approved chargers, so they have standards for safety, and they test them and certify them. So as long as it's UL approved and you have a good reputable electrician, you should be fine.
Yep.
Bam.
There you go.
All
that's
right.
That's all I have to say on it. Boom, that's that.
Electricity.
Electricity. How does it work?
Batteries.
Magnets.
Magnets.
Magic.
Magic.
It's all magic.
Something with a key and a kite. I don't remember.
Yeah. He just kind of know how it worked.
Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.